Well, you know, people are talking about another hour. Dave Pezzo joining us from the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. Pezzo. So how you been, Dave Pezzo?
I've been really well, yeah.
Been alive on social media and everything else and all these funny things going on?
Yeah.
Let me hit you with this. We've had this issue involving, and by the way, Pete and Matt, we'll get to you guys coming up in about 30 minutes if you want to call back. That's great. And we appreciate you joining us here. Dave Pezzo, the gun industry, they're under fire. They're under siege right now.
Yeah.
So if I'm Remington, if I'm one of these places that support the Second Amendment, support people to protect themselves, support others, how am I positioning myself right now?
You know, this is it's interesting, and I think I hate to try to predict these types of things, but this has been coming for a long time, and now you're hearing it really from both sides. They're going to talk about this, about whether it's automatic or whatever it is. I think that there's going to be something there. So when you're thinking about it from a business perspective, if this particular company makes a lot of money, again, I'm not a gun guy, so I'm speaking out of, ignorantly.
You're
about
a business
this,
guy.
But business-wise, I think I would be...
You're the most qualified person in the room to speak about this stuff.
Exactly.
So
I'm good with that, but I'm just saying I don't know it, on the automatic side, things like that. If that's a big part of their business is selling automatics, selling guns that will fire multiple rounds per second, that kind of thing, I think that's in trouble for future sales. There's no way to get the guns off the streets. But my feeling is if you're talking about a handgun for personal defense at home, things like that, I don't think it's under that much of a stress right now. And I would be less worried about a company that focused on that. I'd be very worried about companies that make all of their money on automatic weapons, or a lot of their money on automatic weapons.
Well, we'll have to see. But, I mean, if you're marketing it, you know, to me, I think you just keep your head down and roll on. I believe the media and the Democrats have an agenda to disarm America. And folks in America, we've seen the assault weapons ban hasn't worked. The bump stock ban hasn't worked. And we're going to see how this plays out. But I don't know if anybody's speaking for the gun owners right now, besides, you know, the NRA or other folks.
Yeah, and I think they are. But I also hear, if you will, the tone has changed to say, look, we need to do more.
Now,
and part of that, I think, is going to be on the automatic weapon side.
Now, I'm biting my tongue here because I don't want to interrupt you. But
No. Go ahead.
The tone really changed? I mean, let's face it here. We've got the media. We've got the Democrats that weren't talking about guns at all.
Right.
Now
they
are. Take your guns. We're going to keep you safe. We're going to wash your fanny. Going to do all these wonderful things.
It has gotten ridiculous. You're right.
But haven't we seen this before? Now, to your point, the president endorsing red flag laws, background checks, couldn't we just see this all get mucked up in the September session of Congress?
We can, but I think you're hearing more from it from McConnell in the Senate, says, well, we're going to bring up and talk about this, but they're going to do it in an intelligent way, Kevin. I'm not saying that they're going to do anything, but I would be concerned on the automatic side, business wise, if you are a gun manufacturer. If it's home defense, I agree with you. I don't think that there's anything there except the Democrats want to take everybody's guns away, and I don't think that plays well in flyover country.
We'll see whether or not the flyover country has enough votes to counteract the continued presence and influence of the coast. So we've got a couple big local stories going on. Number one, something that this program, we're very proud of, brought it to the forefront. Doesn't take really, as you know, and I'm not speaking about you, sir. I'm talking about the ilk of the media. It doesn't take a brain surgeon to work in the media. It doesn't really, I mean, it's a C-minus work, if you will.
You're right.
But we've been talking about this for quite some time. The rising home taxes.
Yeah,
that cough again. Your friends are going to be worried about
you. I hear you.
You know, hopefully you're okay. Anyway, sidebar aside, here we have people, now the statesmen, covering an issue that we've been covering for months. Thankfully, they've picked up on this. You have retirees and others worried about losing their homes because of the excessive tax rate.
Yeah. I'm glad it's hitting some press. It's other than you. You and I talking about this, it's something that is, I believe, a monster problem long term for the average person to be able to afford to live here. We don't talk about the fact, you know, everybody, housing prices are so high. Okay, that's fine. And interest rates are so low, it makes it more affordable. But what isn't going down, isn't holding its own, are taxes. And tax rates have gone through the roof. And there is no end in sight because we have to put up a library. We need a new baseball stadium. And all these things cost a tremendous amount of money.
Well, no, that's your boy in Boise. That's not the rest of the peeps.
Yeah, but every county, city around has raised their taxes terribly.
Sure.
I hear a lot from people in Nampa talking about it. Everybody talks about Boise. Nampa's gotten out of control, too.
Now, so, what do you mean Nampa's gotten out of control?
Tax-wise. Their taxes have gone through the roof.
Well, Canyon County doesn't have the industrial base that Ada County does.
Correct.
So residents in Canyon County do have to pay more, and whether we're talking about Nampa or Middleton
yep.
or Caldwell or what have you. But back to this point, what do we elect government to do? Okay, we hear that this legislative session,
mm-hmm.
not to get too wonky, because I can't even spell wonky. Is it with a Y or an IE? Anyway, they've got this thing where to pay for Medicaid expansion, they're looking at making the counties pay for it.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, if there was no plan to pay for it, like you bought a building several
right.
years ago.
Right.
You had a plan to pay for it.
Right.
The Petso Center.
Right.
So if there's no plan to pay for it, why did the representatives and the senators approve it? Well, the voters did it. As we know, and going back to Idaho history far before I got here, there was a thing called term limits.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature said, we don't care whether it passed or not. We're not going to enforce it. They could do that.
Right.
Now, they could have done the same thing with Medicaid expansion. We don't have the ability to pay for it. Now, all this money is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
People are being taxed out of their homes. You're the czar of finance. Well, right now you are. What's going on?
Yeah, it's you hit on it earlier when you said, what do we elect government to do?
Right.
And the reality is we seem to elect government to spend money. To spend money and spend future money, raise taxes and raise revenues and spend it. They don't fix problems typically. And that's one of the concerns that I always have with any government is it just keeps on increasing rather than becoming more effective. It becomes less effective, but it doesn't matter. They just scream because it's less effective. They scream for more money. I think that's a fundamental problem of any government. And so asking government to suddenly behave properly is back to the taxpayer base. Kevin, we have to be responsible.
But is it up to, and by the way, you're listening to KIDO Talk Radio, Dave Petzl, Kevin Miller. Is it up to the free market or government to solve the housing situation? This week, Dr. Ben Carson is coming to town.
Yep.
We love Dr. Carson. He's a great young man. Senator Crapo, a vibrant, dynamic
yep.
young man as well. They're going to be meeting about the housing situation. They're going to Caldwell where they're building homes out of shipping containers.
Mm-hmm.
Look, is it up to the government? Is it up to private enterprise to figure this out? Because everybody's coming in. Like the old days with the gold in Idaho. Maybe you did that back when you were a kid, panhandled the gold or whatever, but they're speculating on this real estate market because people can't afford to live here.
Right. They
and,
can't.
And Brother Petso, let's go back eight, nine years ago when we were talking about cul-de-sacs being empty.
Yep.
And homes valued in Canyon County, the median price now is over $250,000. The median price was $140,000, dropping to $70,000.
Yep.
Ada County, it went from, maybe $125,000, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
now the price, I mean, you're a market guy. And I know this is a convoluted point. You're going, look, dude, this isn't O'Reilly. Just get to the question. What is going on here with the uber inflation of home prices? When you take a look at this, you're a market guy. It's exploding.
Yeah.
So is it government or private enterprise
that's making it explode
that should solve the problem, or you just let laissez-faire, the buyer beware?
Well, there isn't going to be a resolution that's an easy resolution of any kind, whether it's private or whether it's government, because we're really dealing with the circumstance of a first world problem. People want to live here. That makes inflation in housing inevitable. There's not a house you can put everywhere. So we're very fortunate in this area to have so much land. And I think we're going to go out south of here and keep going south. I understand that there's fundamental problems, thanks to a listener that was able to tell me that out this way. Why don't they build out that way? And why do
towards
we
over- Mountain Home.
Towards Mountain Home and towards south, dead south, but out by the prison. Why not go out that direction? And the answer is it's much more difficult to build out there because of the lava flows.
Who doesn't want the prisoners as neighbors?
Well, I'm not saying you have to be right next to the prison. But, Kevin, it is a first world problem. People want to live here. There isn't an easy solution at all. In fact, I don't think there is a solution that doesn't involve some form of government. But at the same time, as soon as you do, because who wants to pay for low-income housing? And in the past, we've tried various programs. They do low-income housing where private comes in and they get tax breaks to do it. That seemed to be, excuse me.
Yeah, that seems to be. You want a sip of coffee here? It's okay if you
I got some water here. I'm okay.
All right.
That seemed to be very effective where private was operating it, and they got some tax credits to do it. But that bill died its death, and it went away. So I don't have an answer, Kevin, as to whether the government should be involved. It frightens me when they are, because those things are terrible. We know what the projects look like.
Well, then why do we have Dr. Carson and Senator Crapo coming to town if the government really can't do anything?
Good question. They can do something. They can certainly come in with tax credits. They can certainly do. They certainly give, if you will, economic assistance rather than their own bureaucratic assistance.
Now, this is, again, by the way, a touchy subject here, talking housing here on KIDO Talk Radio, but you take a look at the rise of all the apartments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are some that have low-income apartments, and those, you look, you work hard, you're a nice person, you deserve a good place to live. On the other hand, you have the density increasing here, the infrastructure not being able to handle it. I mean, the other day, you just drive around. I know you don't go past Boise.
Try not
past
to.
The gates of Boise. But you go into you know, Meridian or Nampa or what have you, and you see these, you know, 5-6-story apartment complexes being built.
Absolutely.
Massive.
I know. And you're right. The density is a huge problem. I mean, we can't have a stoplight every apartment building, but we're going to end up doing that, right? Because because of that incredible density. So I agree with you. We are getting to have that kind of density that you see in California more is happening here. And
build
you see it
wall.
In Denver.
Build the wall.
Build
Dave.
The wall. I know.
You know, a lot of people laughed at me when I talked about building the wall.
I know.
They're not laughing
it's
now.
It's good. They're not laughing now. We want that wall. No more Californians.
More. Just kidding, everybody. More coming up next. Dave Pezzo, Kevin Miller, KIDO Talk Radio. Dave Pezzo joining us. Kevin Miller in the morning, KIDO Talk Radio. So some of the big business news. You know, Bernie Sanders is talking about getting rid of student loan debts and burdens and everything else. How about this one? Chase Bank forgives all credit card debt for Canadian customers.
Huh?
Yeah.
For Canadian customers.
Yep. Erases all credit card debt for Canadian customers. Holy slate, Batman. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Okay, I Maybe wish I was born in Canada.
Us.
Does it mean I go out and charge it up and then I go, oops, forgive that? And they go, yeah, well, you're a Canadian. We love you. So
apparently they're good at getting out of the Canadian market. So this is their last chance to set you to get something on your credit card. And they're going to forgive all the debt, apparently.
Crazy. I don't understand that at all. Why would they be getting out? All right. Well, that's the rest of the story we'll have to dive into. I haven't heard of such a thing.
Here it is. Chase made the decision to exit the Canadian credit card market. Maria Martinez, she's the vice president of communication for Chase Card Services. Quote, as part of that exit, all credit card accounts were closed on or before March 2018. A further business decision has been made to forgive all outstanding balances in order to complete the exit.
All right, so it's too late to rack up those credit cards. They're out, but they're just leaving the rest of the
balance.
They're
peacing out. I guess Canada is not a good investment.
I guess. Well, that's really crazy, though. That's that is another one. That's like a broken glass theory, right? You keep letting the little things go. If somebody doesn't pay off their bills, why would they pay it off next time? Right.
Good thoughts. Good thoughts indeed. Couple other headlines here with Dave Pezzo. Goldman Sachs economists say fears rise that U.S.-China trade war leading to a recession. What's going on with the Chinese? You're down with the Chinese.
Yeah, I'll tell you. This is the trade war recession part 23. I think Goldman Sachs has called for it three times, and J.P. Morgan's called for it at least three times, and so on and so on. They just continue to call for a recession, or the Trump tax cuts were a sugar high. All of these things are, I don't know why. Why don't we just look at the data? Yes, of course it can lead to a recession if it turns out to be an all-out war. It doesn't make you right. It makes you obvious. if things turn, you know, take a more vicious turn and turn into a currency war or something like that, then we have bigger issues. My concern with the Chinese right now, actually, is what's going on in Hong Kong. I'm very concerned about that. That they come rolling in there, the freedom that is, and come rolling into Hong Kong, it would be, I think, very, very damaging to the markets and is much more probable than I think it was a month ago.
Well, it'd be damaging to the Hong Kongians.
It would. And also, though, the economic world. It's a bastion of freedom in a land of non-free. So I think that, their objective is to crush it in the long run. But at the same time, it certainly is a source of capital and a source of business for the mainland. So I think that they're running a tightrope here, trying to clamp down on Hong Kong. But I'm concerned it could erupt into a Tiananmen Square type of thing.
All right. Dave Pezzo joining us. Kevin Millen, The Morning KIDO Talk Radio. What is a trade war?
Good question. I think that we're not having a trade war right now. We're having a spat. A war, I guess if you want to try to define it, make up your own terms, but it would be all-out tariffs, or we will not trade. We will not buy anything from you. And so that would be, of course, devastating to both countries and trade all over the globe. The economy of the globe would be in trouble because of all the supply chains that go around. But what is a trade war and a currency war is even more interesting, because a currency war is where we devalue a currency to try to make our goods and services cheaper. And that makes yours more expensive. So you can see the currency manipulation in China. They've admitted they did it. And they came right off of it. As Trump said, that's enough is enough. And they did stop. But we're sitting around wondering if that's going to be a weapon that they try to use. I think it'd be very dangerous for the Chinese and could spark unbelievable, out-of-control inflation. So I don't think they're going to try it. But if they do, that could be the next level in this trade war.
Dave Pezzo joining us. Kevin Miller of The Morning here, KIDO Talk Radio. Anything that we should be looking out for?
Well, I think that what's going on in Hong Kong is a problem. Everything is about the trade now with China, even though it's gone on for a very long time. The stakes are now beginning to get amped up to the point that that's what people are going to be focused on right now. And we are, as you always point out, Kevin, in the doldrums of summer, which means markets can be moved pretty quickly and easily as many people are still on the beach.
Still on the beach, but business continues. The rise of electric cars. Mm-hmm. You've got BMW and other people getting into those now. It's Volvo as well, following the Tesla model. Do you think that will continue to grow? And then what we hear the issue with electric cars is, again, the lack of infrastructure, and they cost so much because the batteries to create them aren't so environmentally friendly. That doesn't get a lot of coverage.
Kevin, I'm glad you brought that up. It's one of those things that we are all of us would like to have greener, whatever, right? Cleaner this, cleaner that. And that's all great and groovy, but we have got to not be thinking about this just from a standpoint of it makes me feel so good because I have an electric car, but I've got a battery that needs to be disposed of, or it takes 500,000 tons of ore to make one battery, which is actually what it does. I mean, it's unbelievably hard to make these batteries, and we've got to figure out a different way, and technology will. But we've got to slow down and say this is a massive problem, because you're right, Kevin. This is not environmentally friendly at all. People think it is. Well, that's great. Pat yourself on the back. You drive an electric car. That's great. But to me, it's not the infrastructure at all that is a problem. It is actually, what are we going to do with these batteries? How are we going to make them, number one, without destroying the planet? Number two, how are we going to dispose of them without destroying the planet? It's both. And it is absolutely terrible. It's the same thing we did with ethanol and corn. It takes more carbon to make ethanol than it saves. Well, that's just stupid. That is just beyond stupid, but we all feel good about it because we're driving on corn. It's just dumb, and it doesn't work, and we got to think these things through, and that is only one example of all of the issues. Solar panels are another. They're going to wear out, and we're using so much of our resources to make them. We've got to think these things through, and we're not so far.
Dave Pezzo joining us. Final thought as we take a look at the cost of the Green New Deal. Democrats saying that if they get elected, the Trump tax cuts are over. What would that do if the Democrats get elected from a nonpartisan approach based on what you've heard of their fiscal policies? How it's different from the president's? What would that mean to the markets? What would that mean to the economy?
You know, Kevin, I always, this is one that, you know, you have to adjust over time. And I've always told people, you know, okay, Obama got elected, leave it alone. Don't get out of the market. He's not going to, you know, politics doesn't matter that much. This one does. I really think it does. It matters a lot if we're talking about the economics of socialism versus Trump and what's going on right now. I can't be positive on business, the markets. I think people, if Trump starts to lose in the polls, I think you'll see the market crater. And I don't think it'll come back if he is not elected. So I think that, you know, it's not going to wait until election night unless it's a surprise like it was last time. But if he's losing in the polls, I think you're going to see, depending on who it is, right? If it's a more balanced Democrat, if there is such a thing these days, if it's not a whack job socialist, then I think that you could find that the market would ignore it. So I don't want to just lay it out that way. But Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or some of these socialists that are out there, they don't have good economic ideas. They're stupid. And all of history says this is just rock stupid. But we're going to try it again because we're smarter, we're better, we're kinder, we're nicer, and it'll work on the 253rd try of socialism. It won't, and that's going to just devastate our businesses and our economies. So I can't be positive if that is the case. I think this is a very important election.
Dave Pezzo joining us. Catch him Saturdays 8-10 anytime at the Pezzo Center. Kevin Miller, KIDO Talk Radio.
Hello and good morning. Thank you for joining us, and I would love for have you join us at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Again, volatile week, and I don't like to talk about the stats week to week, and we're not going to get into all that, but you have to acknowledge when the market is volatile, and it is. But as I look at it, and I looked at it on Friday and thought about this as the week was just grinding away, right? And everything looks ugly. It doesn't look like it's going to do anything positive. Just like, you know, a good day would be like hanging on. You would think. And yet we had a couple of good rallies, and we had a really strong rally on Friday, which is unusual leading into the weekend, right? Because we can have more tweets and more problems, more issues, and more out of position, if you will, for the entire weekend. So when you come back on Monday, you're like, why did I buy on Friday? It's crazy. But we had a big buy on Friday. And again, we don't trade short term and things like that. It's just kind of an interesting thing that the market wants to go up because it seems to want to go up. It doesn't make any sense when the market's getting pounded and pounded and pounded and pounded with bad news day after day. And what's going to happen? You know, interest rates inverting and all that. And we'll talk about that later today, too. Don't worry about it. If you've been wondering what all that nonsense is, we'll talk about it. And you have all this going on. And it's just palpably negative out there. But the market goes up. Interesting to say the least. That the market would want to go up. Because it wants to go up. Why would it want to go up if all the news is bad? And remember, you've heard it from everybody. Stocks are overpriced. We're heading into a recession for almost for sure. That's not what you do when all those things are true. If stocks are expensive and the market's volatile, money doesn't come into the market. It runs from it. If we're heading into a recession, you don't go buy stocks because earnings will be down next year. So, again, kind of back to that question that what are we asking ourselves? Right? What are we talking about? What are we thinking about And the answer really is, stocks are cheap. They're just flat out cheap. The market wants to go up in spite of what all the doom and gloomers want it to do. All the Trump haters want it to do. I mean, if you ever, all except hiring a marching band and coming up with new cheers against the U.S. economy, the Democrats can't stand the idea that the economy is doing well under Donald Trump. It's the only economy in the world that is doing well. I just don't think we give quite enough credit to that. It is the only economy in the world doing well. That's amazing. That's an economy that's working. It's a stock market that says it's cheap. Now, remember, cheap is also a relative term. It's a totally relative term. So when we're talking about investing, you have to be thinking it's cheap compared to what? To its historic average? I've never fully embraced that idea. Yes, I love history. Yes, I study the markets, of course. And I do think there are certain barriers, or you will, if you gravitational pull towards certain norms, certain medians. But when interest rates are super low, I don't think that the stock market should have a P/E ratio that's relative to when rates are super high. And you say, why? And that's really, you know, just a kind of a divergence here for a little learning thing, okay? Our little education segment. When interest rates are high, that's a real barrier for stocks because you can go get interest-bearing bonds, you know, government-issued with no risk, that are yielding a lot. That's what you call competition, right? Tough competition to stocks when interest rates are high. Little competition when interest rates are low. Now, if you want to really get into it, I'll just also quickly explain. It also means that businesses get to borrow money at lower rates, which increases their profits. It's more likely they'll expand when interest rates or borrowing rates are low. Cost of capital, if you will, is low. More likely they'll expand. The more likely they'll raise dividends. Buy back stock because they're sitting on cash earning nothing. Why not buy back stock that they don't have to pay dividends on anymore? So low interest rates tend to fuel stock prices higher, which is why zero interest rates or negative interest rates around the world is part of the reason that the various, if you will, monetary police, monetary chiefs are trying to stimulate the economy. They're trying to push people into, quotes, risk assets like stocks. That's what they're trying to do. So when we equate whether the stock market is cheap or dear and saying, well, you know, based on a historic norm of PE, normal PE ratio of 16, stocks are normal. Okay, that's true, but irrelevant, because when have we dealt with interest rates this low? The true norm would be probably over 20 PE ratio when interest rates are below, say, 3%. And we're way below that. We're, what, 1.5 on a 10-year treasury? So we look at this and we say the market is very, very cheap. And I'm going to talk about in the next hour, really cheap when you talk about cash flows. So isn't that, I mean, when we think about this, we think about it, people calling for the recession 7 times in the last 6 years at least, right? It's like recession, right around the corner. We're in the 9th inning, blah, 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 blah. It just goes on and on and on and on. And like a stopped watch, when you're finally right, you're not right. Calling for a recession, I call for a recession sometime in the next 20 years. I'll just keep calling for it. Sometime it'll be right. Put me on TV. It's crazy how we get this constant mantra going and nobody wants to step out, or few do, and simply say, why is the market doing well? It's cheap. Well, I mean, it's not cheap. It's 16 times or whatever babble they have. Yeah, That's cheap when interest rates are this low. What alternative? Everything, it's all relative. If we relate it simply to cash, bonds. Let's take bonds. You want to talk about a bubble at 1.5%? You know what its P/E ratio is, price to earnings? It earns 1.5%. What is that, a 75 P/E? Unbelievably high. Bubble-like. A bubble-like flight to safety. But it's also being driven, and I'm going to have to take a quick break here. It's being driven by cash flows all over the world. That's going to be part of our discussion as we talk about this inverted yield curve, okay? But when we talk about what's going on in the market, and it's not something we do day to day, but when it gets volatile, you have to think about it. Because most of our clients are in retirement or very near retirement and rely on income. So how do you generate income in a zero interest rate world or 1.5 10-year treasury if somebody wants to take out 4% of their income? How do you do that? Well, you don't pile in to 1.5% treasuries, do you? It's a very interesting world. And it's just interesting to me, too, that this market is saying, I think it's screaming, it's cheap. It's too cheap. And that certainly doesn't mean it's going to go up on Monday. We're in a volatile period. But volatile doesn't mean it goes straight down. Volatile really means, although very few people pull the trigger, it means opportunity. People just don't pull the trigger because volatility frightens them. They don't see it as an opportunity. But it is an inevitable part of owning the great corporations of the world, which is what the market is. You own a piece of the great corporations in the world. And what a much healthier way to think about it than little pieces of paper, like you're at a casino game. And I know that the equity indexed annuity pimps will try to scare you that way. Try to give you a, if you will, a misdirection. It's nothing more than a random turn of the wheel. No. It's nothing more certain than if you're the casino, in the long run, you win. And if you're an investor in the long run, you win. That's always been the case. Always. Always. That's the real story. All right, we got to take a quick break. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Please do give us a call. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, if you like email, prefer email, that's dave@petsofinancial.net. That's our live, if you will, email. Okay? So for now, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Let's go to our buddy Jim in Boise. Jim, thanks for calling.
Morning, Dave. How's it going?
Excellent, sir. Thank you.
Well, I guess I'll have to go with my old standby, accumulate cash and wait for the crash. Now, you know, you were saying that stocks in general are cheap, you know, and, well,
relative, Jim. Again, it's a relative term. Where am I going to put money because I'm a pension manager, pretend, right?
Right.
Or I have $1 billion and I'm just, what am I going to do with my money? And you might say, well, you can sit on cash, you're a billionaire. That's true of the billionaire. But you won't have a job if you're sitting on cash in a $1 billion endowment fund, right?
Well, you know, what I was meaning was, you know, normally I like to put a buy order in, you know, and get a good deal, right?
Right.
Now, in general, if things are a good deal now, maybe putting in a buy order, especially if it's a little low, wouldn't be a good idea because maybe they're, you know, it's a good deal already.
Probably you found over time, Jim, that when you put in your buy orders, the you don't hit them, especially if you're down below, right? It doesn't, like, you, if you walk in and look at the market, go, you know, I'm willing to buy, you know, Caterpillar down 10%. Well, that's great, but probably it doesn't do that most of the time because most of the time the market goes higher. But sometimes you get a break and it can go, and it doesn't matter if the market's cheap or not. When we get in these volatile periods, I think it's a tremendously positive strategy to say, hey, you know what? If Google breaks, I'll buy some. You know, if it snaps down 100 points, you know, I mean, again, you got to look at these things on a percentage basis. 100 points sounds like a lot, but, you know, for an over $1,000 stock, it's not that much. It's less than 10%.
You know, for one thing, for instance, you know, I guess you look at your entire portfolio. If you've got a lot of equities already, which I do, then you're not really losing that much by accumulating cash because eventually you may get a good deal. And so if you have accumulated cash, you shouldn't sweat it that much.
Exactly. We were looking on Friday, and I can't give the name of the fund, but we've done a tremendous amount. Actually, we called up the company and kind of came up with this kind of interesting thought process, and they were happy to run with it and run all the numbers. And what we asked them to do, because the fund has been around for many decades, is to give us all of the three-year rolling periods. So there's hundreds of those, right?
Right.
If the market is down, I mean, no, not the market, the fund itself is down 10%. What are the chances of you losing money over the next 3 years? Now, and then I said, now wait a minute, before we do this, because I think I'm right on this. I think your chances are the number of times it's happened are zero. So what I'd like you to do is go back and look at it at 9% or 8% and so on, and go clear on down until it fails. And so I got to thinking, I started looking at it on Friday, and I went, wow, you know what? We're only 3 cents a share from down 6%. So can you imagine an investment that's only down 6%, Jim, that has never in hundreds of rolling three-year periods, which is 1 month, three-year periods, never, ever gone down, and the average return is 18% per year. That's, to me, is stunning. It's just, and the worst return's 15 per year. So when you look at that, you think of times like this, to me, it puts it in a different context. I want that extra. Give me those 3 pennies on this thing, right? And we're like, bam, we're in it again. And that's with reinvestment. So when we get these breaks, the other thing I know you do is you dividend reinvest on some of your holdings. That's when it also really shines. When you get these periods that are kind of choppy, you're going to get a few buys in there with some of your companies that really take a hit.
I never so-called dividend reinvest. I collect everything. I don't have invested like, you know, because to me, so I get the dividends and then I have the capability of doing what I want to with it, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, that's totally another strategy. But what I'm saying is if you aren't using it and you're in a really a period of choppiness or what have you, that's another thing. Maybe not speaking to you, but this is a period to turn on those dividend reinvestments as well if you're not using the cash. Instead of letting it build up. Jim, I'm up against it, man. Thanks for your call.
Well, take care, may the force, you know, may the volatility work in your favor.
That's great. I like it. I like it.
Okay, take care.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye. And we will be back for hour number two after the news here. Fox News is next, and then we're going to be right back with you. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And of course, these are my opinions only, not the station, broker dealer, any of that stuff. And we'd love to hear from you. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You know, as we get into times like this, you hear more and more. There's a couple things I want to touch on, and I really want to dive into this yield curve inversion because you hear it in the news. And I want to talk about as well why bonds in my mind are such a bad idea and that we really need to rethink. And I've been saying this for years, I know, but it's worth stating again why modern portfolio theory is stupid. And because we do get stuck in our own places and our own thoughts. But it was just interesting when I was sitting there thinking about it at the break here and wanting to come back. I wasn't even going to talk about this, and I just went, no, you know, we need to touch on this. Because when you think about this, and I was a little harsh. I think that people that sell only equity indexed annuities are pimping products. It's all they have to sell. That's it. Everybody needs one of these, and it always reminds me of those funny old commercials. Remember that they would come in, and there'd be the young couple would come into the bank, right? And we're a financial institution. We have many, many options. And so the young people are sitting there and they go, okay, and based on your circumstances, I think you need our super CD. Middle-aged couple comes in. Based on your circumstance, I think you need our super CD. Old people come in. Based on our circumstances, I think you need our super CD. In other words, they only have one product. Now, who in the world thinks that's a good thing? That's like when people say, well, what about this? Yep, that's a quiver. There's one. I mean, there's so many tools out there. Not one. And anybody that has one it's crazy. I don't even know why people give them time. No wonder their pitch gets so good. They've only got one pitch. Go to a registered investment advisor, a certified financial planner. They are bound by the rules, not ethically, or just morally, they are also legally bound to be a fiduciary, to have many tools, to choose the right tools, and that no tool pays them more than another tool. I mean, it just seems so obvious to me. And so, yeah, I'm harsh. I just don't know how to say it. And I feel the same outrage that you feel when you see that for your parents and grandparents, that they get trapped into something that won't work. It happened to my grandma over and over again. She's so trusting. So trusting. Anyway, all right, aside. Back to business here, huh? Let's get some business done. Yield curve inversion. What is that? Okay, let's start with what that is. It means short-term rates are higher than long-term rates. And why would that be? Because if I'm going to loan you money for, let's say, 10 years instead of 2 years, I would want more money for 10 years, right? Because I'm kind of locked out. I mean, that's a long time, 10 years. If rates go higher, there's inflation, or I want to do something else with my money. I simply can't. So rates almost always are a normal curve where you have to pay more the longer out the curve you go. And guess what? That's true today. So I don't want to confuse this, but I do have to acknowledge that clearly the 30-year government bond is more expensive. It gives you more interest than the 10-year. So it's not a fully inverted curve. It's just this 2-year to 10-year that everybody wants to correlate to a coming pending recession. Okay? Confused? Yeah, I know. Me too. It's confusing. But let's just think of it this way. What we have is that, and you hear about every single day, the inversion of the yield curve. Is that short-term rates are higher than the 10-year. And that has been a pretty good signal that we're heading to recession. Not perfect. I said pretty good.
But I also want to acknowledge, or I think we should acknowledge, I'm not trying to pretend we're never going to have a recession, because we will have recessions. It just doesn't look like we're having one to me right now. At all. I know the media wants one. They hate Donald Trump. I know the Democrats want one. They hate Donald Trump. I know the average person doesn't want one, because that means there won't be an overabundance of jobs and wages won't continue to rise rapidly. They might fall. When we have this circumstance, it's very unusual. It takes a while in the past. This is the problem with averages, right? So you have an inverted yield curve, then it doesn't work, then it inverts again, and then it works right away. But then you might say you have one that 36 months later, we had a recession. Okay. So we throw out some average like, yeah, well, on average, the market keeps going higher for 19.3 more months, which here's what I guarantee. It won't be 19.3 months from now we go into a recession. It'll be sooner or later than that. These kind of things we just toss out like, you know, I'm so well studied and I really know my stuff here. Just let me show you. Where it's completely irrelevant. So be careful when we're talking about this and people tossing it around. And let's just take a deep breath. And why don't we look at the ground conditions? This is not predictive. Let's just look at where we are, okay, in the world, and see if we should be terrified by a yield curve inversion. What's coming? Okay, now I'm going to leave off all the rosy economic statistics. You know what I mean, right? All the fact that we're at the lowest unemployment rate for minorities, very near for, you know, those privileged, terrible, mean, awful white people too. They're really, and they should have higher unemployment just because, you know, they're privileged. But all of those folks, we know that the jobs market's on fire. We know wages are rising, particularly for the lowest wage earners. We know that the economy is phenomenal, right? We got that. It's fantastic. And let's just put a period on that and no comma buts, just accept it's a good economy. So if it's a good economy, why are we reverting or inverting? Now, you can say that that's a prediction that's going to be bad. Okay, anybody can predict. We watch it every day. Goldman Sachs, for the 17th time in the last decade, has predicted a recession that never occurred, but they're predicting it again. J.P. Morgan comes out with another. We're thinking it will be 2018. I mean, 19. No, it's going to be early in 20 or whatever. Everybody's trying to be a hero. They just call for them over and over and over again. Doesn't make them right. So we got to be careful with that. You can predict that if you choose to. But everybody has, and they've failed miserably. So what I'm saying is, let's look at what else is out there. What is really out there driving interest rates? Well, what drives all bonds is demand for those bonds. Demand meaning buyers. So the institutions go, okay, I want some of that. And so they go, you know, we'll bid for $1 billion of a 10-year treasury. 1.5, that's pretty low. Huh. But it's 1.5, and we need to have some 10-year treasuries in our bond portfolio. We're an insurance company. You have to match off your long-term liabilities. There's lots of reasons that every day people just go in. They're not guessing interest rates. They're just simply saying, this is what we need. Okay? So they need that, and they buy it. But there's also you and I and all the other, if you will, the, quotes, marginal buyers, and there's many of them. They're global. So let's just say you are a pension fund, and you've got $1 billion you really want to put into fixed income. That's your allocation. And you're looking around the world, and you're in Germany, and you look, and you go, okay, we got the German 10-year. We can put $1 billion, and we're guaranteed in 10 years to get back less than that, not including inflation. So much less than that, because rates are minus 0.6 in Germany right now. And you go around, you say, well, We like the French. Let's check that out. How's zero there? Well, you know, we trust the we don't trust the Russians. Hey, Chinese, it's currency manipulation. No. Oh, Switzerland. Let's do minus 0.75. Cost us even more. Man, we got to place this. Where are we going to go? I don't know. How about the world currency, the most trusted currency in the world, the U.S. dollar? They've got the best economy. It's growing. It looks like we might even get a gain or a boost on it because of the dollar appreciating. But at the very least, man, we get 1.5. That's 2 percentage points better than if we dump it here in Germany. We actually are going to get back more than we put in. Maybe not after inflation, but on a nominal basis, we're going to get back more. You don't think that trillions of dollars are coming here because of that? And we don't talk enough about that. I think it's a really important thing to acknowledge, to understand, as we worry and fuss over the inverted yield curve. You see, people aren't going out and buying so many 30-year treasuries because they trust that interest rates will be so much lower in 30 years, that negative interest rates are here forever. But when you have $15 trillion with a T dollars in the world at negative interest rates, that's whack. That is really whack. And I hate to say it because I hate to say this, because when you say it's different this time, everybody kind of looks at you like, I know, that's the dangerous words in investing. It is dangerous. It is dangerous, and it's also absolutely true. It almost always is different this time because there's different conditions. But this is one that for sure nobody can argue about. We've never had negative interest rates all over the world, ever. Ever. It makes people get excited about stuff that makes no sense. Little pet rocks. Some people call it gold. Pet rocks. I want my gold. Why? Because it doesn't cost you anything to have your pet rock. And if it's going to cost me 0.6% to own the stupid bonds, why wouldn't I buy some pet rocks? At least it costs me nothing. Well, storage costs, things like that, shipping, high margin trading business. I get all that, okay? But on balance, if you're trading $1 billion here and there, maybe you can go ahead and buy some pet rocks, not have the same margin as Joe, who wants to buy an ounce of gold. So we have this money flow all around the world, and it is flowing into the United States because people actually can think. Why wouldn't I want to own U.S. treasuries if I'm in China? Well, I know they probably shoot you there if you have money outside of China. But for those who are, say, in the Communist Party, those that have all the money, they can do what they want, and I'm sure that they are buying U.S. treasuries. I know that the Chinese government does. And we've heard, by the way, all my career, the Japanese, when they leave the market, the U.S. interest rates are going to go through the roof. We're going to collapse. I've heard that forever. When Europe leaves, blah, blah, blah. When the Soviet Union and the Chinese come up with the new world currency, we're all dead. Heard all that, okay? All my career. I don't know if 50 years from now that the U.S. dollar is the world currency. What I do know is that the ground conditions today are it's the world currency, and it has the highest yield. Unless you want, Zimbabwe bonds, I think they yield more. That's why money's coming in. And so I don't think we have to be sitting here at this time fussing about or going back and simply looking at the charts of all the recessions and saying, this is for sure, because why? It's different this time. So let's watch and see what happens. I'm not saying we won't have a recession someday. I am saying we always will have recessions someday. But to sit here and pretend that we know how long. You know, it's just the next recession is just around the corner. But I don't know how long the block is. Right now, it's been a really long block. And for at least 5 years, really longer if we think about it, but let's give people a break. Let's give the doomsday crowd a break. They've been calling for and saying, this is over. It's over. It's over. It's over. It's going to be over. Yeah, don't bump your tape. I repeated myself. But that's what they do. It's over. It's all over. It's the late innings. Just when I hear somebody say, well, you know, we're predicting it's late innings, I just want to jump on a sword. I mean, my gosh, can't somebody come up with something new? I've heard this late innings thing for at least 6 years. Never ends. This is like the thing that never ends is the new normal. Oh, God. L. Arian had that one. That was just wonderful. I don't think he's predicted anything right for at least 10 years. But the new normal was what we all talked about because that was his buzzword. We just really have to sometimes stop and think about it. I don't know what the future is going to bring. I really don't. I don't know what the market's going to do next week. I certainly didn't know what it was going to do Friday morning. I was surprised as everyone else when the market was up 300 points. And the market was only down 1% for the week. After an 800-point drop on Wednesday, that's pretty good. Back to what I said originally. That's just a market that wants to go higher. It's surprising. And next week will bring surprises too. But the idea that we have to trade around this is just crazy. And I really want to spend some time the rest of today talking about how crazy that is. How silly that is. But I also want to talk with you. I really do. So please do give us a call. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And also, if you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. Hey, if you ever have any comments, questions during the week, I would love to hear from you. Shoot those over to petsofinancial.com, where you'll also find podcasts of prior programs. If you're interested in digging deeper into what this equity indexed annuity is and why it doesn't work. It doesn't. And for many people, that's good enough. It doesn't work. And people like me don't use it. And Goldman Sachs doesn't use it. Sounds too good to be true. Your grandma knew it was too good to be true. But if you want the details, I break down a couple of them and why it really won't. There's a clip in there. And happy to have you pass it on to whomever. What is always interesting to me when we talk about this, okay, is this is a two-sided show. You are more than welcome to call in. And that is always included. I've mentioned this many times, that if somebody that just is a purveyor of these beautiful products, equity-indexed annuities, has ever disagreed with me over the past, I've been doing this for 30 years. But they've really been out for the last 10. I mean, big time, 10, 15 years. Nobody's ever called. Nobody's ever called to say, you're wrong. You're just so wrong. Because when you look at the facts and how the products are built, it's nothing anybody would own. Ever. But at any rate, we have that on there. Lots of stuff. Didn't mean to run down that road because what I want to do is I want to talk to Michael. But go shoot us an email, call us, and we've got articles and calculators there at petsofinancial.com. Let's go to Michael. Michael, you want to talk about some tax cuts, huh?
Yes, sir. Thanks, Dave, for taking my call. It's good to hear your voice on Saturday always.
Well, thank you.
So here's my question. So you mentioned earlier the possibility of the 2020 election, God forbid if a Democrat wins, that would sink the economy and the stock market. And so I'm wondering about the Trump tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody complains about them, but everybody, you know, all the brackets got a percentage cut.
Except the highest. I think that's important, Michael. The highest taxpayers, just I have to say this because this is the great lie that the left puts out.
that the lowest people, lowest income people did not get a cut. Who didn't get a cut were the highest income people. That's who didn't get a cut. The lowest income people got a cut. But go ahead, please.
Well, sure. Well, anyway, so let's say under this, I just want to leave you with these assumptions, then I'll get off and just listen to you. So let's say Trump wins in 2020, and you know that the left media doesn't think him. Let's say he wins in 2020, and let's say in 2024, maybe everything turns and we get maybe Michelle Obama, and the media loves her, so they would probably sweep her in. And what would happen if those tax cuts are repealed? What do you foresee for investing, for investors, and the stock market, and all this? Is that kind of a clear question?
It
or
is.
Do I kind of
yeah.
model it?
What happens if this happens? Whenever it happens, right?
Right?
Whether
right,
it's 2020
yeah.
or 2024, I got you. All right.
Correct. Okay, now I'll just get off and listen to you on the air. And thanks very much, Dave. I sure appreciate it.
Michael, thank you for your call. We appreciate it too. Have a good weekend. Thanks. And our the thing is that's good. By the way, our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I want to make this clear too, because this is not a prediction of what's going to happen with the election. It's just a fact, okay? If we move from a pro-business environment to an anti-business, high tax, and where do you think the jobs are coming then? They're coming back to the United States. Companies are not leaving because we're no longer the highest taxed corporate tax in the world. So we're not watching all these companies leave. That's just a fact. It doesn't take a economic degree to simply acknowledge that if a corporation is free to go around the globe, why would it locate in the highest tax neighborhood? It won't. And that's what we've been doing for decades. That stopped last year. It literally stopped. It'll take some time, but if we undo all that, it would be disastrous. That's just a fact. It's not a question of what's going to happen, but it won't happen overnight, and there's no reason for people to react to it. The market over time, depending on the polling data and what kind of leftist is running. If we get a normal, and I want to make this clear, a normal Democrat is their chief, right, or, you know, who's running for their party against Donald Trump, well, I don't think we see massive policy change. I get it. There isn't anybody in there, but we haven't made a decision yet, right? It's going to be, you know, Kamala Harris. Okay, she's a leftist. I agree. But she's not as left as Bernie or Elizabeth Warren. And socialism part 243 isn't going to work. And that's not my desire to be a low-tax guy and more freedom. It is my desire for that, true. But it's also a simple fact. It doesn't work. Economically, it doesn't work. So if we're heading that way and Trump is losing in the polls, that's not good news, and the market's going to be going down well in advance of the actual results on election night. So as I said earlier with Kevin, it's just, we're not going to wait around. But at this point in time, I just cannot even fathom that this country, by and large, those of us in flyover country, think that socialism works. We actually learned that it doesn't. It does not work. And so, Michael, I would be concerned in any time that would change. I also believe that if Trump had four more years to fix some trade deals, which I think he's working on, to continue deregulation, that the economy will be wonderful and nobody's going to want an 180-degree change to that. They're not going to say, you know, this is working so well, I think I want to try that socialism thing that's never worked.
I don't think that's going to happen. So this, I'm hoping, is the peak of the nuttiness of the left. We need two parties in this country. We really do. But we're watching one, in my mind, just implode with the dumbest ideas ever. And it's like, it's kind of like, let's amp it up, right? You know, it's like, even on the abortion thing, which is a very important thing to some people, it is. To a lot of people, it's a really important thing. Diametrically opposed views. But I don't know why we're in a bidding war of how long it is we get to kill a child. I don't understand that. I just don't understand. It seems like the nuttier it is, the more, of course, people want to just like take that right away. And they're going to come to my door and confiscate guns? That's just, why? Okay, well, do we need some new laws? Maybe, maybe not. Let's have a dialogue. But these are the kinds of things that they've gone even more extreme on. And I just don't think it works. More extreme, I don't think that's what most people want. They want dialogue and discussion. You and I can agree, and part of maturity, or disagree, and you and I don't know why you disagree with me, but you and I can disagree, but part of maturity is to also accept that people have different viewpoints. Not want to kill them like they do in Portland. This is just nutty. It's weird. All right, I'm off the rails here. I want to talk about dividend yields, and I want to talk also, I've got an email here as well, but hopefully we'll get some calls. I got to take a break here for Fox News. 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our live number. Do give us a call. We've got a good chunk of time left in today's program. Would love to hear from you what your comments, questions are. I'm going to start this segment, though, with an email. And that, by the way, our email is dave@petsofinancial.net. So thank you, Susan. Please comment. I'm sorry, it's titled Finland's Fail. Please comment on this event. As our country hurdles itself toward the same types of programs that brought down the Finnish government, we must pay attention to this failure before we arrive at the same place. Susan, you're right. We do. The problem, I think, is a very natural human problem. We can scream and yell about it. We can talk about it with our kids and try to get them to think things through. But it's one of instant gratification. And if it's not a problem today, and it's not, why not promise people lots of money and then they will love me and reelect me? And I make lots of money and I have lots of power and I get to dole it out to my benefactors. That's the problem. There are very few adults in this political room. Yeah, where's Ronald Reagan, right? And Tip O'Neill working together to solve great, great problems in our country. And we had an amazing boom after that. I don't see that. And at least at this point, I think there's a shot at it. A shot. If Trump wins, especially if he wins like it feels like to me he's going to win in 2020. Big. And if that's the case, and if the Republicans do carry in the House or get it back and continue to keep the Senate, I think a lot can get done. I mean a big picture lot. And I think there will be some moderate Democrats that will come along too and say, no, we can solve the great problems, the great long-term problems. We can. We just have to dial in and get the trajectory changed so that revenues will meet the outflow at some point. We don't have to do it this year, but we've got to change the trajectory of disaster. Anyway, maybe I'm just the eternal optimist, but I do appreciate what you're saying, and we have an enormous problem. $20 trillion of debt is not okay, and that's just what we owe currently. It's not what we're going to owe when Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security implode. It's a frightening problem. It's a frightening problem, long term. But I think we're just not addressing it because, well, short term. Party on, Garth. Party on. Just make it happen. So thank you. Thank you for your email. I appreciate it. And feel free, shoot back any of your own comments, questions. It's Petso Financial. I'm sorry. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. All right. You know, what I'm thinking of doing here, I have to take another break. I got kind of behind here. So I think we're going to take a break. So that leaves a huge, more than 10 minutes into the top of the hour to take your phone calls at 580-KIDO. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. We would love to hear from you. Hey, one more time, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to seek some information, we've got articles, calculators at our website. We also have podcasts at PetsoFinancial.com. So, and also, obviously, shoot us an email. If there's something you want us to touch on during the program, please let us know. All right, let's go to George. George, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. Hey, I have a question about tariffs. Mm-hmm. The way I see it, if we put tariffs on Chinese goods, then we pay that extra price. So they send us a dollar's worth of goods, and they put a 10% tariff, we pay $1.10. The president says that the tariffs have not affected prices yet so far. Mm-hmm. And his argument is, one of his advisors' arguments is that China has lowered their price to send it here in the first place so that it ends up effectively being about the same. He says that it may happen in the future. But I don't know whether it's psychological or not, but what's your opinion of that?
Well, first of all, so far, that is a correct statement, right?
Okay. Yes.
But long-term, having tariffs is not good. Totally free trade would be great, but that's not the way the world works. And so you have some that it's totally free, like we're pretty free with Canada, but it's not totally free.
Uh-huh.
They still gouge us on wood and dairy and things like that. And until Trump came in, that was like totally okay. And he said no more. And so NAFTA's been changed. And it should be, because the freer it is, the more it makes sense. You don't want to have certain these are my buddies over here. I really like the corn farmers because you know what they do? They give me lots and lots of money to run. So I'm going to favor them and not favor the bean farmers. That's silly, and it doesn't make the economy operate well. So without tariffs, better. But with tariffs, we at least want to have them be fair and reasonable, balanced. 10% your country, 10% ours. That makes for a freer environment. Now, when they come in, what the president's people are saying is that currently prices are not going up for the stuff that is being manufactured in China and then shipped to here. So the United States does, as Trump has said many times, they're sending us billions of dollars, and we just take that in. Now, it is hurting farmers, and so some of those billions that they've collected, it's nothing more than a tax, collected, have gone right back out to those people that have been most affected, and that is the farmers. There's no question that they are taking a bit of a hit. But they're being more than compensated for it. So but they're still very much behind the president on this. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, as a group, I'm sure there's some that are angry and are not just angry about the tariffs, don't like him. That's the way it is. The people are different. But I don't know if I fully answered your question, George. So let me clarify whatever it is you want.
Well you said it. That was it. It was that what he said is correct so far.
Yeah, but long term, I'm not. You know, none of us are convinced that this couldn't get out of control. It could.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think it will, but it could.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, some of it is like the news is is constantly pounding on how bad the tariffs are, and sometimes I wonder, because thinking about, well, what am I paying for food and stuff like that? We haven't been very mobile here lately because both my wife and I got injured, but still, it seems like it's just about the same. It's just not very much different.
No.
So I'm tending to think that the president is right, but every time he says something like that, they start making fun of it for it. So I just wonder if it was psychological on my part of thinking, well, maybe he's wrong.
Yeah. So far, he's right. It
mm-hmm.
has not had an effect. He is correct also when he says it's the right time to have a trade war. It is.
I totally
for our
agree
country.
With that. I don't much like it. I don't like the effect that it's having on my accounts, but it's still okay because I know there's the good stuff in the future if we get a good deal out of them.
It's absolutely true, and it's not a win and lose. It's that the Chinese are bad actors,
yeah.
And as I've said before, I don't want to paint any single ethnic group into a box, but culturally, it's a den of thieves. This is not a country in our country, it would be embarrassing to be caught in a lie.
Yeah.
In their country, it's not. It's just, it's not embarrassing. And you, yeah, so what? I stole your money. You're right. You're right. You're a fool. I can't believe I took one over on you. That's the way it is. And when you do that through the society, you say, yeah, bow and be nice and all that stuff. That's great. And then at the same time, you're ripping off all these countries who are just so greedy to have access to a billion people that they steal their technology, they steal and pirate all of their intellectual property. It's a really bad situation that's come to a head. And just like any child, you stop them from eating candy, they're going to they're not going to like it for a while.
Right.
And that's what's happening right now. You're done stealing. Period.
Another question. Do you hold to that what we have allowed China to do for like 30 or 40 years has lifted a whole bunch of Chinese people out of poverty and into the at least lower middle class?
Because
their society does seem to have changed.
I do think so, yes. I believe, George, I believe that to be the case. I think it's when countries are so poor, and China was, then I think it's okay that they get a little bit better deal, right?
Uh-huh.
Because they
uh-huh.
just can't. They simply can't. So we want to set up factories there, and we're going to go ahead and let them not have have heavier tariffs. That's okay. We're winning on the other side because the consumer in the United States is winning. That's okay.
Uh-huh.
But when you start stealing intellectual property, and that's what I think this is really about, and spying. And this whole Huawei thing, I don't know, because it's not going to be noticed in any mainstream news. But Huawei was really, again, in the news with aligning itself to spy in Africa.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that, George, but this is, to me, just another, hello, the president was right. He wasn't just blowing smoke. Huawei is a spy agency. That's what they are. And completely not from the United States government, not from them at all. It came out of a little government in Africa. Yeah, they were spying. And here's the two guys that did it. Yeah, we did. And they admitted it, talked about it, helped them set up doing it. They are bad actors, and they've overstepped this time. They don't just make widgets anymore and try to get people off the rice paddies and quit starving 200,000 people a month to death over the winters there, as they did. Millions died every year of starvation. And so it's just one of those things that's good, but we're way past that now. You guys are just crooks, and we're done.
Yep. Well, thank the Lord he's there. Mr. Trump is there.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
Thank you, Dave.
George, thank you. Great call. Thanks. Have a great weekend now.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye. All right. I'm going to finalize this. We've got a couple minutes left in today's program, and I just want to quickly, I guess it's less than that. I want people to really think about this and the income story, the greatest story never told. I've told it many times. And think about what the yields are, that more stocks in the S&P 500 have a higher yield than the 10-year treasury. And history says they'll raise it. I mean all of history, year after year. Not every company, but collectively. We have dividend yields in the S&P 500, the great corporations of the world, that are 3 and 4%. 3 and 4 in a world of 1.5 10-year treasuries. See, when people put their money in cash, they put their money in bonds, they make the choice to have less income. They make that choice. So when people are out there touting it, and we know what the equity indexed annuity people are going to be talking about. And the reality is, when you run the numbers, no matter what it is, you're going to get a 3% return. That's what you're going to get. No more. You don't get the upside. We all know that's a myth. 3%. You can get that today in corporations that have been around for 100 years. And raising their dividends.
and your money's not tied up. You can get that today. It's your choice to bury it. Have a great weekend, everybody.